Hello, and welcome to the Behind the Bra podcast, brought to you by Barbells for Boobs, where we are redefining the standard of care in breast health and improving the quality of life post-diagnosis. I am your host, Zayana Hansen, and the founder of this incredible organization. Thank you for joining us. Today, we have Kate Wagner, a mother, breast cancer survivor, and an all-around badass. I said it. There you go. Whether you like it or not, Kate.
Yeah.
Claim it. You got to own that. Own it.
Own it.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited as well. So we're going to start today with this my favorite question, because I think it's so important that everybody knows, who are you, Kate?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I've listened to the last several podcasts and you asked this question.
You've done your homework. You've done your homework.
I did. And I'm like, I have so much anxiety about it. I guess the biggest thing is I'm a mom and I'm a coffee lover and I'm a book reader. And I don't know. I'm becoming still. I don't know. New things are happening. So we'll see. Yes.
Every moment is an opportunity for growth. Like,
yes.
We're always growing. So
absolutely.
So where were you born? Where were you raised?
Ooh, okay. So I'm originally from Maryland, just outside of Annapolis. And I lived there my whole life until I was 23. And then I happened to get pregnant in college and my parents happened to have recently moved to Texas and they lured us here with free childcare. So here I am in Houston.
That's a
it's a good deal.
Yeah, I would move too. Right? To be honest.
Yes. But you know what? It all worked out. It was meant to be that way because you know, we're by one of the largest medical centers in the world. And my mom was actually diagnosed with breast cancer 3 years before I was. So
wait, what? Rewind.
Yeah.
Your mom was diagnosed 3 years before you?
Yes. Yes.
Oh my goodness. Alrighty. Yeah.
So. And we had the same treatment and the same doctors and it was wild.
So were you in Houston when she was diagnosed?
I was. Yes. I was pregnant with my second daughter. And she called us over and she sat me down and I knew something was really wrong because she like couldn't speak. Mm. And my mom has been like, she's always been ill. She had like reproductive issues and all kinds of stuff. So she's had lots of surgeries and done lots of things. And it's never been an issue, right? Like it's an issue, but it's never been like, oh my God. And then like, as soon as I sat down and I looked at her, I knew it would be cancer because her mom had cancer. And then we always said when for her and when for me, not if. And so I just knew. And then 3 years later, wham, bam, here I come. Overachieving, by the way, mine was worse than hers.
So what did your life look like, you know, kind of right before your breast cancer diagnosis? Like, were you living in Houston? Were you working?
Yeah.
What was your day-to-day what did it look like?
I was a happily married eighth grade language arts teacher with an elementary age daughter and then a toddler. And I just like, I was so happy. I was going to the gym all the time. I was cooking. I was doing my thing and life was good. And then it just changed.
And then it
rapidly.
And then it was.
Like just got a dog. Like I got my dream dog. He's a Great Dane lab mix. I named him Albus Dumbledore because Harry Potter is everything. And like, and I was so like, you know, things were just like life was happening and it was good. And I was in it. And I had just turned 30 in August and I had gone to my primary care doctor because my cycle wasn't right. I just was, you know, new decade. I was like, all right, we're going to be healthy. We're going to do this stuff. And I had mentioned that I had like a lump in my breast and she was like, I don't think we need to worry about it. You're really young. And I was like, well, okay. And I had been asking since my mom's diagnosis, like, when do I get a mammogram? Like she's 46 because my parents are really young. I was like, when do I go? And they were like, oh, not till 10 years after the age, like before before the 10 years before your mom's age of diagnosis. And I was like, okay, fine. We'll do that. But that put me at 37. So I hadn't, or 36. So I hadn't like had a mammogram yet. And I asked her, I was like,
let's just talk about this really quick. Like, I want to know, like, scientifically, mathematically, research driven, why, like, where do they come up with this number of 10 years?
So
and why
mad.
Do they even have a number on, like, it makes me so angry that there's an age even associated with breast cancer.
I agree.
Like, if you have a lump on your breast, how about we just get it checked?
Because I know.
The youngest age for a breast cancer case is a 9-year-old girl. Right. So we all can have it. So let's make sure we check ourselves.
Well, like I had gone
like,
to.
It's crazy. It's like 10. Where did they get this number? 10.
I don't know.
Is it like a. With, like, I want to know where this calculated. If anybody's out there listening, please email me at barbellsreviews.
Let me know too.
Let me know where this information is coming from. Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, yeah. Okay, no. I love it. Because
I'm better now. I'm better.
Yes. She was like, yeah, you know, you're really young. And I was like, okay, well, what about my cycle? And she was like, oh, we'll just put you on birth control to regulate your cycle.
Don't
and I was
answer.
Like, okay. And so for like 3 months, I was taking all of these hormones and this birth control and my lumps like wasn't going away. And I hadn't said anything to my mom about it because right after her diagnosis, after my second daughter was born, I was like, we can cut them off right now. I was like, I don't even want to, like, we can just let them go. I'm done nursing. I nursed for like a total of 3 years. You know, I did all of the things. I never smoked. I never did anything. I ate relatively healthy. Like, and I was like, let's just cut them off. And she was like, no. And the doctors were like, you don't need to worry about it right now. And I was like, fine. So come December, I looked at my mom and I was like, I have a lump and I've had it for a while. And she was like, child. And she was so mad at me. And she gave me the number for MD Anderson's undiagnosed breast clinic. And she was like, call them. And within 7 days, they saw me. And I knew that day that I had breast cancer and everything changed.
That day.
Oh my God. Yes. I cannot advocate for going to one of the major cancer hospitals enough. Like the series of appointments, it was like, I called, they saw me within 7 days. I met with a nurse practitioner. They did a physical exam. I went and had a mammogram. They agreed that there was something more to look at. So I went straight to an ultrasound. And the ultrasound, they were like, yep, we need to do a biopsy. I got the biopsy without even putting my shirt back on. Like it was just one seamless process. And then the worst thing that ever happened to me while I had cancer happened to me right then. They like took several, they took like a big chunk biopsy, the core biopsy, and then the fine needle aspiration. And the fine needle aspiration comes back within like 15 minutes. So I'm just like laying there on my phone because you're alone. And they come back in and they're like, the ultrasound technician was like, well, you're going to have to tag one more spot that we biopsied. And I was like, okay, fine. Like totally normal. Mm-hmm. And then the, oh God, what are they called? The learning doctors, the resident came in and she was like, yeah, we're going to tag one more spot. And then the doctor, what do they call the radiologist?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. There's so many. Get confused.
The technician.
Yeah. The doctor comes in and he's like, yeah, we got to tag it. 'Cause it's got cancer in it.
Oh.
And I was like, no, what? And so I'm like alone and my arm is up over my head. I'm shirtless in a room full of strangers. I'm like trying not to hyperventilate while they're putting more needles into my breast. And I held it together. And my mom had come with me to the appointments and I walked out and I just lost it. Those poor people in the waiting room. I couldn't. And I texted my husband. I was like, I have cancer. And he was like, I'm sorry, what? No. And
before you heard those words, did you like in your gut instinct, did you think that that's what it was?
Yeah. I was sure before. And I think that's why I didn't want to call because it was like I had like a lot of cancer in me. It was like getting bigger and it was like the whole top side of my breast was firm. And I just knew, you know, in like your bones when something's wrong. And I knew.
I just commend. What facility did you get screened at?
Or what? MD Anderson.
Oh my gosh. Just because I hear so many horror stories of, you know, I had to wait and that was the hardest part, was the waiting time after my biopsy and not knowing and sitting there for a few days and then getting a call out of nobody knows where you're at in your life. And then I get the cancer call, you know? And so I think that that's really kind of the care that needs to be taken. You know, that's how we should be cared for when it comes to a significant thing in your life, like a cancer diagnosis of, hey, we know right away and we're going to inform you right away.
Yeah. And the delivery could have been better, but yes,
I agree. The approach, the bedside manner, for sure. And it's hard. I can't imagine for medical professionals. I mean, that's got to be something where you just have to detach yourself emotionally and just, imagine how many people they have to tell they have cancer. And so I try to be empathetic to their job and them trying to create those boundaries to not get so emotionally attached.
Yes.
What happened next? You're with your mom in the waiting room. You're probably sobbing in the waiting room. Everybody's looking at you.
Yeah.
What was the next thing you guys did?
My mom was like, she like took my face in her hands and she was like, Kate, you're going to have one hard year. She was like, I'm here. I just did it. We can do it together. One hard year. Let's go home and have something to eat. And she's like, what do you want? And I was like, I want Carrabba's. And wow. So she drove me home and I'm like a very, I need like things need to just be very, very clear. And I have to talk out sort of my feelings. So I know where I stand. So I called my husband. And I was like, we're coming home. This is what's going to happen. We'll be there at whatever time. And then I called my brother and cause he took it really hard and my mom had it. And I was like, listen, I was like, I have cancer. And he was like, no, you don't. And I was like, no, I do. Like, I literally just found out I have cancer. And he was really upset about it. And, I don't know, like I just went home and I hugged my kids and I hugged my husband and I ate dinner and then my parents left. My dad came over. Oh my God, my poor dad. That man is like a rock and he was struggling. But then I called my in-laws and I told people, I was like, I have this thing. Like some people, I guess, have to keep it in. And I couldn't keep it in because it would have just eaten me alive. So I started telling everybody, even really before I knew anything. I was like, this is happening. Oh shit. Like, let's go.
You ready?
Yeah.
Wow. And how long did it take them to come up with your treatment plan and kind of where you were at in your stage and what did the next few weeks look like in your house?
Let's see. I took the next day off and I like made all these phone calls trying to organize my life. Cause I knew right from my mom having just done it, that it was really going to change. And, they called me the next day. And they asked me some questions about care and I requested my mom's doctors. I requested her breast surgeon and I requested her oncologist. And they said that they could get me in sooner if I didn't want to see both of them on the same, like if I didn't want that to be my team. And I was adamant. I was like, I will wait. I want these two women. And so 3 weeks later, I went and they had the results of my biopsy. And, they were like, we're going to do a mastectomy first and we're going to do, chemo right after. And then we'll see after the mastectomy, if you need radiation or not. And so I was diagnosed. I had that big appointment on January 9th and I had my mastectomy on February 20th. And then I started chemo in March.
What year was this? How long ago has it been?
It was 2019. So just over a year.
Just over a year.
Yeah. Wow. Just over a year since I finished. So when they did my mastectomy, I had them put the tissue expander in. I just did the one side. Mm-hmm. And when I went back, you know, for the follow-up appointment with the breast surgeon and they really went over my real results, they had to remove all of my lymph nodes because it had moved into my lymph nodes, but I had really, everybody says it's really nasty cancer. So I had DCIS, I had, invasive ductal and invasive lobular. So the three different kind of ways to have cancer. It was triple positive, and it was growing like back into my breastbone. Like it was growing into me and not like spreading out. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so like the breast surgeon who knew my mom, she like cried when she gave me my results. And I was like, oh, great. Okay, cool. Like, awesome. So that's fun. And then my oncologist was, she's just the most wonderful human on the planet. And she held my hand and she was like, okay, we're going to do it. And I did the TCHP. And so that's the 6 rounds every 3 weeks. And then I did 6 weeks of radiation. And at this, the whole time I was trying to hold it together for my kids and everything, I didn't go to work because that first week of after chemo, I just like barely moved. I couldn't even watch Game of Thrones on TV. That was my thing. I watched all of Game of Thrones on chemo. It was like, I had never seen it.
It's funny how like we have these memories of what we watched. Like I remember what I watched when I first had my son.
Right?
Anarchy, like the 2 a.m. Sons of Anarchy show.
Yeah. With my daughter, it was Penny Dreadful, and I would scare the shit out of myself.
Well, my problem was like, my son would be asleep, and then I'd be like, I want to watch another episode. And my husband's like, you need to go to sleep.
Right? You need rest. No, I don't. I'm fine. I'm a machine.
I'm fine.
But yeah, that whole time when all of that was happening at the same time, my marriage was completely falling apart. And my husband just like couldn't deal with me being sick. It was like the straw that broke the camel's back. Like we had been together since we were seniors in high school. And we have done like my whole adult life has been with this person. And he just like didn't come through the way you would want anyone, even like a friend, to come through. And so I was like embarrassed by that, I guess. Like I couldn't put my finger on why. So I like tried to hide it while I tried to fix it. So I don't even know that I dealt with the cancer as the cancer was happening. Like that was very robotic for me. Like this is what happened and this is how I react and this is what's going to happen next. And then I have these 2 weeks of good times. And when I feel good, I'm going to really focus on my kids and I'm going to try to fix these issues. And so like the trauma of like being diagnosed with cancer was completely swept under the rug and overshadowed by the trauma of like my person abandoning me when I needed a person. And thank God for my parents because they saved me. You know, my mom my mom came with me to everything. He didn't come. He came once.
Well, I think it's like in the darkest days, you know, in your darkest days and your darkest moments are like you figure out who are your light, right? Like you figure out the people that will shine their light on you and make you feel like give you some type of hope in your life. And then you figure out the people that don't come, you know, and don't shine their light and they kind of and the hardest part I think is the people that you think are going to shine their light on you that don't. Like that's especially somebody so important as your husband, your partner. Like I'm so sorry you had to go through that. That's not an easy. It's not an go ahead, sweep it under the rug. You're not a machine.
No, I'm not. And it's not easy. It's not easy to like reconcile the person that you think you knew with the person that's standing in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I feel angry, right? I feel angry because I feel like all of these things that happened to me, I was not able to like appreciate them for what they were because I was so worried about somebody else in a time that I should have been just so worried about me. And I'm learning though that like it's okay to like care about people and like want to help people, but like you have got to help yourself first because I didn't, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm still dealing with that.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that just kind of how we're built. You know, I think that number one as people, but especially as women. And, you know, I think that because we become mothers and, care, you know, we automatically are the primary caregiver because we we not only birth the child, but we carry the child in our own bodies for so long that it automatically gives us this intuitive caregiving, you know, personality that all women have this, especially if you're a mom. And it makes it so easy for us to care for others way more than we care for ourselves. It's actually more intuitive to us to care for others than ourselves. And then when we do care for ourselves, it's associated with guilt and shame. And so for you to actually care for yourself and get rid of this person that's not even advancing you, but just not bringing any joy to your life. Like that's, but again, I think that unfortunately sometimes you have to go through really dark times to figure out who those people are. And those are signs for you to be able to heal yourself. And now you know, right? Like it's, I would rather just know, like just tell me, just so I know.
That's how I am. Like don't sugarcoat things and don't like hide from me and don't like, I'd rather it be like a one big swoop and it hurt real bad for a little while than like death by a thousand cuts, you know, like just, okay.
So did it drag on or was it kind of something where you guys made a really fast decision or was it, you held on as long as you could?
Well, yeah, because I think it was like too much for my brain to handle at one time. And I was just like, that's not a thing. Like that's not happening. And I was terrified for my kids. I was like, they cannot have these two things be together in their memory. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't, like, I don't know, as a child, how do you process that? Like, my eldest is just, like, literally the sweetest, most caring, sensitive child on the planet. And, like, I just look at her and I was like, no, you're not going to do this. Like, you can be mean to me, but you're going to pull your shit together and you're going to handle some stuff until these kids have a chance to process what's happening to their mother. Mm-hmm. And so I think I kind of regret that because like, we're still not technically divorced. That's next month. It's next month. It's my Christmas present. But,
I see how amazing that like 2 years goes by and now you look at it as a gift. Right? It's a gift.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That we sometimes don't want to. Yes, perspective. It's a gift we didn't want to open up.
Right? But now it's here. I'm ready. Like, can I have it now, please? So, I don't know. It's just, again, I just wanted to take care of people. And I think when I got sick, I realized how much, like, I leaned in to the love I had. Like, my school was so supportive, and they showered me with love, right? They gave me gift cards, and, like, the staff, my last day, the whole staff was wearing a shirt, a Team Kate shirt, and I was just like, oh, my God, I cried. And like, my friends, my neighbors, my surgery day, they put, like, a Harry Potter spell that, like, defeats evil. They got, like, a card in my yard. And so I left for the hospital, and I was like, oh, my God, it's amazing, right? So, like, all of these people were around me, like, trying to hold me up. And I loved that, and I was so grateful for that. And I just really wanted to lean into love and like appreciating people that that were around me, and some people made it difficult, and you know, we don't need that kind of negativity in our lives. No. That's not a thing. So here we go.
And so you get done with treatment, I'm gonna assume at the end of 2019, and you kind of get into this, you know, new year, get through the holidays. I'm sure getting through a lot of agony when it comes to your marriage and kind of what's happening at your house. And then we enter into 2020.
Well, we forgot to mention
the best year of the world.
So let me set the stage for you. Okay. So 2019 was cancer, failing marriage. My favorite dog died in October. And then 2020 happened, and I was like, okay, we're like, things are going to be fine. We told our kids in February that we were getting divorced. I was like, we can handle this. It's going to be great. Literally the weekend before the pandemic happened, the girls and I moved into my parents' house because it's safe and welcoming, and they were helping me get back on my feet. I still had my reconstruction coming up in the summer. I had it in the summer. And then the pandemic happened and I was like, no. Like, we're not doing that. Like, I can't be alone in the house with my parents and my kids for months on end. But I did. I did that. That's a thing that I did.
The Great Dane?
I survived.
Your Great Dane dog?
He got to keep that one. No, we had that was our third dog, right? He kept my favorite. My dog! He can't get it, but no. Our first dog, her name was Luna. All of our pets are named after Harry Potter characters, but her name was Luna, and she was a boxer mix, and she was 9, and she held on for me as long as she could, but she was just ready to go.
Because it was October, you were done with your treatment?
Yeah, she held on for me. Mm. And then she went. So now I have our other old dog. Her name is Tonks. And then she's a pit. And then he kept the big one because my parents already had 4 dogs in their house. And they were like, hell no, he's not coming inside. And I was like, fair, fair.
That horse does not belong here. No.
It's a big house, but it's not that big, okay?
We don't take horses here.
Yeah. So that's how 2020 started. And then I had my reconstruction in the summer in June. And then, oh my God, it failed. So I got implants and I had my right breast, my cancer was on the left side, and I had my right breast removed also because I kept getting lumps from the menopause because I'm triple positive. And, it was stressful. So I was like, take it away. Like, I don't want to play that game for the rest of my life. But they did an anchor shaped cut on the non-cancer breast, and the glue right at the base where the two incisions come together came off early, like a week after surgery, and it just wouldn't heal. And then it opened up and I could see the implant, and it was the most terrifying, disgusting thing. Oh. So 4th of July weekend, I had to go back into the hospital. Oh my God. Do it again. So it made me have to sit on my ass. Sorry. But like, I had to sit and do nothing for 10 weeks because of the way it timed out. Like, I couldn't. And
for
I was
10
afraid.
Weeks?
Yeah. Because it was like 3 weeks after my first surgery, I had to go back in and do it again. And they had to completely take out the implant, clean out the pocket, put a new implant in, and reseal the incision. And then my plastic surgeon was like, please be extra careful because we don't want this to happen again. And mm-hmm. I was like, you right, friend, we don't.
All summer,
that was really a hard time for me because like my marriage was ending and I was living with my parents and I couldn't go anywhere and I couldn't do anything and my kids were struggling and I didn't know. I quit my job because I'm a teacher, and in Texas they sent teachers back to the classroom with no limit on how many kids could come in the room. And no real mask rules. Like, it's strongly encouraged, but not a disciplinary measure. So I was like, that's not safe. My mom's high risk. She's got asthma. Like, no. So it's a mess. My life is a mess, but it's getting better.
It's like a beautiful mess.
It is a beautiful mess.
It's a beautiful mess. So now, like, how did you find Barbells for Boobs in all of this? Were you a part of, like, when you say you were working out, did you do CrossFit? Like, how did you find us?
I did. So, I guess maybe, I don't know, 2013 or 2014, I was really active in a local box and they did a fundraiser. CrossFit.
I know a few of them in Houston. That's why I'm asking. So
yeah, it was a smaller box and it's closed now. But I loved it, and I just thought it was so great. And then it was amazing. And then in this year, in October, the box that the old box sort of transitioned, like the one where most of the people went, I saw on their Facebook that they were hosting an event for Barbells for Boobs. And I was like, that would be fun. I wish I could lift. I'm never going to lift again. Like, I don't have any lymph nodes. I don't want to get lymphedema and all this stuff. And then I clicked on the link just because I liked your new branding. I was like, wow, that's really cool. I want to look at that. And then I saw you had all of this stuff for survivors. And I was like, no way. And then I started listening to podcasts and I was like, no way. And then I was like, I need to get in this. And because I miss, like, I played lacrosse all through high school. I played in college. I rode in college. Like, I have always been physically active. I'm big on yoga. I like to ride my bike. I like lifting heavy things. Like, and I really felt like I couldn't do it anymore because I got all messed up. And then I found you guys and I like cried. I even called my crappy ex and I was like, oh my God, this thing. And he was like, wow, that's really great. You should do it. And I was like, yep, mm-hmm, I will without you. It was wonderful. And yeah, I'm so excited because like I'm a member on the Facebook page and I just see all of these women and they're so inspiring. Like every one of them is just so inspiring because to take something that like really ruins your body mm-hmm. in many ways, not just across your chest, right? But like everywhere of your body, it's all impacted. And to like take that and just tell it kind of like, no, right? Like I'm going to do this anyway. Is just so incredible to me. I like, it's so inspiring. So I've started working out again. I hurt myself, but I'm getting better.
Have you connected with our coach, Jaytal?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
so make sure you reach out to her. She'll make sure she work, yes. like will work directly with you on any injuries or surgeries or anything like that. Make
she's
sure you.
She's been so great.
She's awesome. She I know. Well, good. I'm glad that you found our community. It is a community of full of really badass women. Just some badass women in there. Really inspiring for women that want to be more after this, you know, and be better after breast cancer. And I don't think that people really know the side effects of breast cancer and the trauma impacted by breast cancer. Like people, I think they just think, okay, you lose your breast and then you get new ones and then you go back and your hair grows back and all these things. And I'm like, no, there's hot flashes, there's scars, there's trauma, there's other things. Like, there's so everything. Much happens, everything.
I can't even like, you know, at 32, you should be able to just kind of get out of bed, you know, like, or get out of a chair and like walk. And I can't even do that because the menopause medicine is so hard on my joints that like I get up and like, my grandma moves faster than I do. Like, I can't, it's so bad. And it's, people are just like, well, you're done now, right? And you're like, well, yeah, except for every, you know, 28 days I go and get basically a straw punched into my abdomen so that my cancer doesn't come back. And I take a pill every day and it makes me hot all the time. And my hair didn't grow back very nicely. I have this nice big, you know, patchy spot right on the top of my head that I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of my life. But you know what? It's just another scar, right? Like I'm okay. Yeah. And it's just hair, but it also is like a thing, right? I think about it every day. So.
Well, it's, and that's, what's nice. I think about the community is I just watch it from, you know, I feel like I'm a spectator of breast cancer. And so I watch it from the sidelines, but just the honesty and the safety of the community and that you guys all share this common thing that you all have been through and understand the like long-term side effects and the long-term trauma. And not that it's all bad, right? I mean, there's definitely women are sharing the good things and the perspective I think that breast cancer gives you and the community that it surrounds you around. But at the end of the day, like, I don't really think that breast cancer is a gift, in my opinion, you know, and I think that I think that women do it to the best that they can. I mean, like, yes, I'm going to look at the brighter side of breast cancer and I'm going to live through that lens, but it's a hard lens to live through sometimes, you know, like to really have that perspective every single day. And one of my friends told me, she explained it to me the best way possible. She's like, Zee, when you get up, you can just get up, right? And I was like, yeah. She's like the road you have to walk that day is like flat, right? Like the ground is flat. And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. Like I don't have any pains unless I did something stupid in the gym, you know? But I was like, yeah, it's like you're right. Like I can get up and just walk. It doesn't hurt me to walk. She's like, so your road's flat. She's like, when I wake up, there's a mountain I have to climb. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I have to climb a mountain every day. And it just, she's like, I don't know how to explain that to somebody, but it's just, I'm slower than you because I'm climbing a mountain. There's a mountain in front of me every day where you have flat land. And I was like, wow, that's such perspective for me because I don't know the side effects. I hear about them. I can empathize with them, but I don't feel them, right? Like, I don't understand that feeling. And so I think it's really important, like, the more that we can share with a greater community, with people in general, that really, what does it feel like to have breast cancer? And what does it feel like the next 5 years after that? What does it feel like to take tamoxifen every day? Like, what does it feel like to wake up in the middle of the night with hot flashes? Like, there's this thing that people have to, like this isn't something that's like done in a year, you know? And so,
I'm absolutely.
For our community, because I've been so educated on this now. And so I'm thankful for you ladies for sharing your stories with us and sharing your concerns and your tricks and their tips and like all the things that happens in the support group.
Well, it's just, I don't, you know, it's like, what, you know, I don't know how to say it. I guess nobody wants to join this club, but like once you're in it, you're like, hell yeah, I'm in it. And, I don't know that I would change it. Ever, you know, like, was it fun? Absolutely not. Do I wish that I still had my breasts that fed my children? Absolutely. I was not one of those women that was like fearful of aging. I'm happy to age. I want to be old. God, I want to be old. But, like, I don't know. I think that even just the switch of like when I was diagnosed, like wanting to fall in love with my life was just so incredible. Like so moving. And I wonder, like, as I reflect on my life kind of pre-diagnosis, my life just kept happening to me, right? Like I was in college and I was trying to figure it out and I had a baby. And then, so I had to deal with a baby, right? Like I had to grow up really fast where my friends were all at the bars and spending their paychecks. I was at home raising a baby. And then I had another baby and then I was starting a career. And I was like, all of these things just kind of kept happening. And I don't know that I picked all of it, right? I'm so grateful for my children, but there was a time that like, I was 23 when I had my first daughter and I was not thrilled about that because I was jealous of my friends, right? And I don't know. I think that cancer has really made me kind of take stock at like of what I'm doing. Like, am I living my life with intention? Because you only get one life. And like, what are you gonna do with it? Like, when your day comes, are you proud of what you've done? Or are you like, oh, well, shit, I should have gone to Scotland, right? I should have gone to Scotland. I didn't. I'm going to go to Scotland as soon as I can fly, right? Like, I don't know. I think I'm sad, but I'm like really grateful at the same time.
Well, let's talk about what's good. Let's like, let's kind of talk about what is good happening right now in your life and what has come out of breast cancer that you can now say, this is good, because all the other things, like when you have a baby, trust me, my son was, I took a plan B the day after our little accident. Like I'm exposing myself, took a plan B, still got pregnant, didn't want kids. And my husband and I were like, nope, we don't want kids. So his name is Cash. We call him Plan C. And that's, God, I love that. And it's just,
that's amazing.
Plan C. But like, that's life, right? And that's, sometimes we don't get to pick life. Life picks us. And my son has special needs. He's autistic. Like, I have no idea why he picked me, but he did. And I'm super grateful. And sometimes life just happens and it picks us, right? And so now that breast cancer has picked you, what has it taught you? What's the good that has come out of breast cancer for you?
Oh my gosh. Well, a lot. I think so many things. I quit my job. Right. And I was sitting here like wondering what the hell I'm going to do with my time, because I didn't want to work in that field and in that condition. And then I remembered that when I got pregnant with Millie, her name is Millie, that I was one semester away from finishing my second bachelor's degree. And I stopped because she was due during finals and the professors didn't want to work with me on that. And so I looked at my parents and I was like, do you care if I like not work and I just do this thing that has always weighed on me, that's so meaningful to me, just completing this goal? And they were like, absolutely do it. Like, go for it. So in, 3 weeks, I graduate college again with my second bachelor's degree.
That's
like, amazing. It was just like so serendipitous that like, not that COVID is good, but like COVID happened. So everything was online and I moved into my parents' house because I was getting divorced and I was having this surgery. So I really had time to just like sit and kind of reflect on what am I doing? And so that's one thing that I got to like, my credits were about to expire. So I really had this beautiful opportunity to fulfill a dream of mine, right? Like it was a dream to finish this degree and I'm doing that. And now, like when I'm with my children, I'm like with my children, right? It's not like we're busy and we're doing all the things, or I'm going to sit next to you on my phone while you're watching a show. Like I'm really purposeful about like paying attention to what they're saying and listening and playing and understanding. And I want to know them and I want them to know me. Like I don't want them to like remember their mother as this woman who was just sort of in the periphery of their life. Like I want to be in their life. And I don't know that I would feel that way if I hadn't had cancer. Right. Like, I don't know. And because I wasn't living super intentfully. Is that a word? Intentionally.
Intentionally.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. I'm an English major. Like I was living and I was happy and things were happening, but we were always on the go and we were always busy. And I think it's a combination of cancer and family changes and COVID that have really like opened my eyes to like none of that matters. What matters is your family and like being with them and loving on them and spending time with them. And I think that I'm really happy about that. And I don't know, so many good things. Like I've learned how to cook better and my mom's teaching me. Like I have all this time with my mom. So like she taught me how to make biscuits. I never knew how to make biscuits before, but they're really good. And
like, no, I'm hungry. Don't talk about food.
Right. I know.
Biscuits too. So, it is Thanksgiving tomorrow. So everyone's ready for some biscuits.
Biscuits. But it's like the smallest things that have shifted mm-hmm. in my life and big things too, but the smallest things I think that are the most impactful. And well, I think that
something like breast cancer, a breast cancer diagnosis and a pandemic that forces us to be with our people, it really, I think, helps us see who our people are and who we want to be with and who we want to mm-hmm. be around, and really understanding that people are our greatest assets. They're yes. They're irreplaceable. You can't replace them. And then I think that you find out who really your tribe is, like who is mm-hmm. Who are your people that are going to be there? And I think that that's all greatness that's come out of breast cancer and the pandemic for you.
Right? Oh, I know. It's goodness. Been like such a shit road. Like I 10 out of 10 do not recommend, but if you have to do it, I really think it's just in how you approach it. Like I told myself the whole time that I was unwell, that the only way out is through, right? There's like no way to not deal with it. So that made it really easy for me to approach everything with like an open mind and an open heart and like, we got to do it. So mm-hmm. figure it out, right? Like figure out how to handle it, figure out how to manage it and get it done. And then, I don't know, I journal a lot. I don't know. I'm so excited for my life, right? Because A, I have a life, and B, like so much has changed. Like I don't know what's going to happen next, right? Nothing is predictable for me anymore. That's so exciting.
It is exciting, and nothing is permanent,
right?
It's like everything is temporary, and I think that everybody's got that has had that lesson this year, which is a pretty profound lesson when you really think about it. You know, like everything that we thought we were going to do this year didn't happen. For everybody. My son, like it's impacted my dog, you know, like it, like you guys are home all day. This is awesome. Like my dog has been impacted, you know, in a very positive way. He's like, this is awesome. I think the pandemic added another year to my dog's life because we're around him so much.
It's so good.
So can I ask you a very intimate question?
Yes.
Are you in love with your life?
I am learning to love my life. I think that I'm still coming out of like, I'm still a little salty, you know? But there are so many things to love about my life. And I think for a long time, I was afraid. I was afraid because I have never been an adult without my husband, right? And so like this new phase has been so intimidating that I was like, I wouldn't even like look at it for a while. And now that I am looking at it, I'm so excited for it. And I know that I will love it because I will make it, right? Like I'm living a life of passion and purpose and I get to create it. And the only rule I have for myself is that I have to put the needs of my children first. Right. If my kids are taken care of, everything else is on the table. So what next? Right. Like I'm just open to whatever. And I'm so excited about that. And I'm ready, you know?
Wow. Sounds like you're in an incredible space, you know, from the even just talking through the very beginning of your diagnosis and what's happened in your life. I mean, it's the two major traumas back to back is just very aggressive. I don't care who you are. Those are traumatic experiences and then a pandemic. So it's almost like one Band-Aid after another Band-Aid. And so I feel like you're probably in this place of removing the Band-Aids and actually seeing the scar and being like, I'm going to heal the scar. I'm not going to put any more Band-Aids on this. Let's heal the scar up.
Scars are sexy, right? I mean, how empowering are they?
There's stories.
I know. Well, gosh, I personally, I like my scars. And I don't know. I don't know. Scars. Like, it's just good. It's a good time to start again, I think.
Wow. Is there anything else you would like to share with our community?
I guess if I could say anything to anyone, especially someone who is worried that they might have cancer or they love someone who has cancer, is like to just show up for yourself, right? Like I let my first doctor kind of write me off, even though I had a feeling. And like, just, you know, this is a scenario where like the patient is right. So like, if you don't feel cared for, say so. And like, that goes for your care team and like your family, right? Like if you feel like you're not getting the love and support that you need, don't be afraid to say so and ask for it. And if you don't know what you need, just say, sit with me, right? Mm-hmm. That's so powerful for someone to just sit with you. And not try to make you feel better. Just like, damn, your life sucks. Like, yeah, I know. And like, that's sometimes all you need, right? Like, thank you. Thank you for saying my life sucks. Thank you.
So well, I think a lot of times people want to fix whatever's wrong. You know, it's like, my husband always asks me that, like, what's wrong? And I'm like, I'm not going to tell you because you're not just going to sit with me and listen. Like he's always going to try to problem solve it, right? And so most of the time I just don't say what's wrong because I don't want you to try to fix it. I just want to sit with it and then process it and I'll come up with a solution and I'll get over it mentally. But I want you to ask me because you really want to sit with me and understand the issue and like just let me talk. And I think that men are just like, let me fix it. I'm like, no.
Right. No.
You can't fix it. Just listen.
Leave it alone. I just want to look at it. Just leave it alone. Yeah. I just think that anyone, a caregiver or a person who's experiencing something, you're your own best advocate. And just like don't be afraid to say what you need. Like, if you're going through it, you're going through it, and just say whatever it is, speak your truth, you know? Mm-hmm. That's all.
That's it. Speak your truth.
That little old thing.
Speak your heart. Kate, where can our listeners find you? I know you're on Instagram. Can you share your Instagram handle with the community?
Yeah, it's at Katie_and_cancer. That's my public one. So
that's your public Katie one. Cancer.
Yeah.
And I know you're on Facebook, so you gotta find her, Kate Wagner.
Yes. Yeah. So find me. Let's be friends.
Let's be friends. Let's do it. All right. Thank you so much for sharing your story with our community and tuning in. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. Kate, thanks for having giving us time during the holidays. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
You got new kids and you've got school and you've got a lot going on. So we really appreciate it. I want to thank our team here at Barbells for Boobs for contributing to the production of the podcast. And remember the lesson from Kate today. I learned a few things. Go fall in love with your life and show up for yourself.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Kate. And that is Lights Out for the Behind the Bra podcast.